This is the Inland Journal. I'm Doug Nadvornik. Today, we're pleased to welcome Spokane Mayor David Condon to our studio. We've interviewed him previously as part of past Inland Journal programs, including a month or so ago when we talked to him about why he vetoed a campaign finance ordinance, and perhaps we'll ask him about that again. It was at that meeting we extended an invitation for him to join us on the radio for a more extended discussion, and he graciously accepted, and so we thank the mayor. You're struggling a little bit right now, but you'll be okay, I'm sure.
A little under the weather, but it's good to be here. Thanks for having me.
So this week we heard President Trump give his first State of the State address, an annual tradition, as is the State of the City address, which you're due to give on February 9th, a week from tomorrow at the Convention Center. So what are some of the things you're going to highlight?
Well, you know, it's just an amazing year, the year past, but more importantly, going forward. But just to touch on a few things, this last year, as many probably saw and drove through it, the largest construction year we've seen. You know, the city's six-year capital plan is just under $1 billion, at $880 million, something that this city has not seen in ever, quite frankly, and funded, and really now as we plan with the council for the first time 6 years out. And so some of those major projects, of course, it was exciting to bring the ice rink online, later this spring, the new carousel building, but also major infrastructure projects, you know, that's of national intention, of course. But the city of Spokane is quite progressive in making sure that we have infrastructure that meets our needs. And so you see large tanks going in, our major multi-year cleaning the river program. Right now we saw the conclusion of the Bosch lot just north of the downtown falls. If you drive across the Monroe Street Bridge today, we're in mid-construction of a very large 2 million gallon tank just north of the Spokane River. We have another one going in over off of Sprague Avenue near what many may not remember as McKinley School, which will really be exciting because we also brought together, we made a major infrastructure initiative and what we call our linked initiative, where we link all of our utilities, your water, your sewer, now our partners with Avista on natural gas and power, and then also with the street projects. And so you saw that on East Sprague, and just a transformation that I would say you have never seen, you know, as it transitioned from a state highway to a local road. We didn't really do anything, but to see and the vitality we're now tracking, what the impact is that has been on property values. And the initial research really shows some exciting increase in property values. And really what's more as exciting, but definitely more exciting, is just the vitality coming back to that area, both new restaurants and older restaurants. And so that's been exciting on the infrastructure side. On the public safety side, also very exciting, as we add 10 more police officers, up some 45 officers over the last handful of years, which you often open the paper here on the radio or TV, the people are cutting. And we really, as we launched our vision for the city and our strategic plan, being the safest city of our size is a major, top of mind. And so that's exciting. I'll just a couple comments going forward of course, this coming year, the city council and I launched a strategic plan about a year ago, and have a couple senior staffers that are working with us. And so transformed the way we govern the city. I'll just use one example. We redid the way we did our committees. So there's four committees. They're aligned to the strategic plan rather than to, you know, the traditional way of running government. And one of them is about public safety. We want to be a safer, healthier, smarter city. And one of those is being healthier. And as you look at our call volume in police and fire, a lot of it has to do with the health of our community. You know, last night we had former Representative Kennedy in town talking about mental health. That, you know, is top issue for police and fire. And we've been innovators in really addressing it in a different way. We have mental health professionals that are literally in the vehicles with our police and fire. We've, you know, our use of force, especially unfortunately with those that are suffering from mental illness, often, you know, we've changed. We're a national leader. Our use of force is down some 40%, even with the onslaught of increased mental illness and that sort of thing. And so we really, as we go forward, we're launching the strategic plan in these key areas. of public safety, innovative infrastructure, sustainable government, you know, that we're adding financially, but also in our people. And then the final thing I'll touch on is the urban experience. We have from the beginning of time, the river has brought, for 1,000+ years, the Native Americans to this area. It continues to do that with us. And you will see in the state of the city, and as I, you know, as I continue to talk about it, just the refocus on the river from the university district all the way through the largest state park in the state is right out. You know, I can practically see it from my windows at Riverside State Park, and harkening back to the early 1900s plan by the Olmsted brothers of going back to a gorge park. And so pretty exciting. Yes, we're doing the projects at Riverfront Park, but really then connecting it in a natural way to Riverside State Park over the next couple of years.
So let's go back to, you were talking about the tremendous construction work that's being done and all of that. It got me thinking about the North-South Freeway, and now that it's the next phase is moving it from Francis down to I-90. There are worries that that freeway is going to disrupt part of the neighborhood over in Northeast. What are your thoughts about that?
Absolutely, and I'll tell you, we took the unprecedented step of assigning a person that, I mean, it's not a city project. So typically, in typical government fashion, we'd wait to see what the State Department of Transportation would do. We have a senior planner that works on a daily basis to make sure that that's integrated into our community. Last year, you may have, your listeners may have read articles about an expired oil tank that was there left over, for, 100 years plus. And so we were working on that and worked with the railroad to make sure that that was taken care of, so that we didn't disrupt the community more. The Department of Transportation was going to elevate the freeway over that area, which would just make it, that much more obtrusive into the neighborhood. We did a project very early at Wellesley, so that we have roundabout there, and so you can access the freeway. So really, is the public sees it. We need to stand firm on making sure that it integrates into our neighborhoods. And really, we've often talked about the north-south traffic. What this really, I actually am pretty excited about it. It really unleashes the east-west traffic and connectivity rather than traffic. And how do we connect Wellesley into this and really make it a hub for new centers and corridors for retail and vitality that you saw, on Sprague, you'll see on North Monroe. The other nice thing, so we have it at Francis, and then you have it at Wellesley, and then, of course, at I-90. But it frees up then that commuter traffic and that freight traffic out of the core of our city so that we can bring our urban neighborhoods back to what they were, and you don't have, commuter traffic coming in from outside the city. And so that's what excites me about the Monroe Street project, that really much of the traffic, will be diverted over to the North-South Freeway. And so it lets us bring what had, been a really vital neighborhood back. And you think about Audubon Park and you think about Corbin Park. And really, it's that Monroe Street corridor that allows you to bring in, grocery stores and barbers and employment centers and coffee shops, and really bring that neighborhood, because the housing in that area and the parks are amazing. But it was bifurcated by a major, thoroughfare. Well, now with Maple and Ash being great thoroughfares for our commuter traffic, but now also the North-South Freeway, and then a lot of this traffic will be able to go on to Division, because, a lot of that freight traffic will move over to the North-South Freeway. So I really think, over the next 10 years, you already see it today, you see our urban neighborhoods coming back in a major way.
Mayor David Condon is on with us on Inland Journal. I think about I-90, and you and I think we're both a little bit young to remember I-90 and that neighborhood. Do you worry that the North-South Freeway is going to bisect that Northeast neighborhood, just as I-90 separated essentially the downtown from the lower South Hill?
I think it's I say this all the time, that my father grew up on Liberty Park, on Hartson there, and you see pictures, I see, a handful of childhood pictures. You see the old pictures. Liberty Park was our riverfront park. It was the community's, watering hole. The water came into that area. And so to think that we did that and to bring I-90 right through that neighborhood, I think you'll see that we're connecting it more, and you're seeing Fifth Avenue and Sprague come back to life. Lower Perry District come back to life. So many lessons to be learned there, to say the least. What is exciting is, as we do plan this north-south corridor, is we have those lessons to be learned. And so, the like I said, Wellesley being a great, you know, east-west entrance into these neighborhoods, and how do we do that? You know, as it goes down over the community colleges, it'll be elevated, and which will be exciting because that's also where our central city line terminates at the community college, which really allows it to be a hub. And in this case, I think, you know, now you have, what is it, 4 to 5 lanes with a turning lane that is on the surface. And I would suggest that, you know, bifurcates it more than perhaps an elevated, but also really makes a node out there in an educational corridor. And just imagine, I look at old pictures. My staff sometimes wonders what I'm doing, but I look at our old pictures of when Washington Water Power had our trolley system and where those went. And, you know, they terminated up at Lincoln Heights, and they, you know, and to think that we're bringing back, you know, that type of connectivity through Mission. Imagine what Northeast Spokane by a Vista and Mission Park's going to look like when you can jump on a major central city line that comes quite frequent, you know, every 10, 12 minutes. So I really think it's going to unleash these corridors into very livable neighborhoods. And you have to take it in its aggregate. Yes, the North-South corridor is for vehicles, but it also has a major Children of the Sun trail system. So those that want to ride bikes and others, you know, that's all, it's multimodal, but you also have to look at it in the aggregate across the city and what that does, like I said, alleviating some of that freight traffic and commuter traffic out of our inner neighborhoods. And
yeah. So you mentioned a minute ago about Monroe Street, and let's just touch on that for a second. There have been threats of lawsuits regarding if the city goes forward with that. Are you worried that the city is going to face a protracted legal dispute with regard to if it goes ahead with Monroe Street?
No, and we're going ahead. You know, you look at it in kind of 5 areas and what the city staff did over the last couple of years to make sure we address those. So for the commuters that come, say, north of Francis, outside the city limits, we eliminated one of the traffic lights so that that would be mitigated. For the store owners, we add 35, 38 more parking spots. If you go up there now, very difficult to get out of your car because of the complexity. You know, we add, you know, for pedestrians and for those neighborhoods, like I said, to connect them, we add a couple more crosswalks, and the sidewalks will be wider. And so really we took into account those that ride STA, that'll be one of the high capacity routes that is similarly what we have on Sprague. And so I believe we did an amazing job of putting the multimodal piece together. You actually see some of the commercial activity happening, new storefronts coming on, and you talk to those owners and they talk about it, you know, it's coming, and your guys' old home and what's happening with that building.
Right.
And so to me, these are tough things. I don't pretend they aren't. And so one of the last things as we address kind of the 5 major issues is the operation. And so for the first time in the construction, and I've owned small businesses. And so for the first time in city history, we're actually doing a project with 2 contractors to mitigate the time that the road is under construction. And so we're working, and we've never done that before. We are paying a premium to do it, but it's worth it to make sure that our small businesses can stay alive. We really learned a lot of lessons over on Sprague, where we worked very closely with the East Sprague Business District and worked with messaging and marketing. And we have, you know, construction ombudsman so that we can really take care of things. But we've really been, you know, as you look at it, and I say this, we talk about it quite often, and went decades without reinvesting in our infrastructure. You know, we're putting $1 billion into our city. I'd be hard pressed to have anybody point to any city across America that's, you know, mid-sized city, 200,000, that's being as progressive and as forward-looking in all of our infrastructure. Just we'll be finishing up, you know, for a city that's 100-plus years old. Here in the late spring, we had, although we detected every year, or we make sure we monitored every year, but we won't have lead in our system. There's no other, you know, major city that can say that. And we had a very aggressive program to remove that. We still test all of it. We hadn't had any lead in the system, but we just wanted to be doubly certain and took the lead solder and things out of our system. And I just briefed the other day, we should be finishing that up here in late spring. And so the light winter has helped us in some of those areas. And so, you know, to me, we need to learn from these projects, but it is exciting to see what our city will look like over the next 3 to 5 years.
So on the 13th of February, Spokane School District's putting a levy on the ballot. The city is working with the school district on perhaps siting schools on city property or where to build. You know, is there a replacement for Albee Stadium? Where's the...
You know, this is so exciting. So this February 13th, I fully support it. This is a replacement levy for their operating expenses. What we've been putting together with them, never done in city history of... You know, we take to heart when we talk, our vision is to be the city of choice, of being smarter and healthier and safer. Well, the number one reason why people buy a house in the neighborhood they buy it is access to a school. And we need premier schools. We have premier schools. We have a system under the leadership of the Spokane Public Schools that has, you know, laboratory sciences at North Central. We have, you know, a STEM charter school. We have an international baccalaureate. And so many things else. So we went across our neighborhood and across the city, and as we look at the property, the Spokane Public Schools have decided to go to a middle school system to comply and bring down the classroom sizes. So that's 6, 7, 8. And so the city looked at its land and looked at the neighborhoods, and so it's exciting that we would be proposing to put a school right by Hamilton and North Foothills Drive in northeast Spokane. We would put one at the former Joe Albee site, predominantly in the parking lot on the south side of that property. And then, of course, you know, in the 90s and 2000s, we've been building out a brand new neighborhood, 1,200-plus homes in Eagle Ridge. But we never planned for a school there. And so the city owns a large portion of property there. And so that would be the third site. The other exciting thing is, as we talk about becoming a smarter community, nearly 1 million visitors to our public libraries last year. It's skyrocketing because of the programming they're doing and the leadership in our public libraries. Well, this is also a partnership with them. They would be looking to put a new, really enhanced library in connection with Shaw Middle School. We would build out Shadle, one of our larger, do some upgrades and partnerships with the school district in the downtown library. And then also one of our busiest libraries, Perry, really looking at enhancing that for the South Hill. So you have it all across the city. But then also a major component of that is that the 30,000 stadium of Joe Albee has long passed its useful life. And I really get excited about the possibility of bringing high school sports and perhaps even minor league soccer into downtown Spokane, about 4,500 seat stadium that would be in conjunction with our field house, which is going ahead. It's all been agreed to. We will have a brand new field house, which will be dozens of basketball, volleyball, a hydraulic track for indoor track.
And that'll be exactly where?
That'll be right on the north bank of the Spokane River. If the public drives up Washington, you'll see big piles of dirt. Those dirt piles leave right next door to the Broadview Dairy, you know, and I think the Blackbird restaurant is in there. So right in that area, we'll have parking associated with it, which will really enhance those that are coming down to the area. But to be known as, you know, the youth sports capital of the Northwest, I just think is exciting. It also allows us to put up to 6 fields out at Merkle to be a true regional asset for regional tournaments. We have 2 out there, so you'd have 8 turf fields. And so for soccer and other sports, just a great opportunity for us. We're known. We have an amazing foundation in Bloomsday and Hoopfest. But to just build off of that, I think, is a great place. I also think, as we look to the future of downtowns, you know, the retail world is being turned upside down. But what's exciting is to see, like, the M come online, which in all intents and purposes was a couple floors of retail, and the what used to be office space was, you know, predominantly vacant. And to see downtown living come to in a real way, to see, you know, I look out my window every day out at the ice rip, and there are, you know, grandparents with grandkids and parents and teenagers on that ice rink. And it just, the vitality that's coming back to our core is pretty exciting. And I think we're going to need to make sure that we're looking to the future, that, you know, where does retail go and what brings people to, you know, what brings people together? And quite seriously, what brought our first inhabitants here, the indigenous, you know, native tribes? And so what does that look like going forward? Is it youth sports? Is it, you know, premier park in Gorge, you know, park? And I believe it is. And you see, and is it the ice rink and the Loof Carousel and the new activities that'll happen in the pavilion. It is pretty amazing to me that we need to hold on to our past, but also look into the future.
So let's finish in our last couple of minutes. You vetoed campaign finance ordinance. The council overrode your veto. Where does that sit right now?
Well, it becomes the law. I don't know whether any of the groups would sue based on the piece that I had difficulty with, and that was choosing one group of individuals over another, and that's where a lot of the legal ambiguity is.
It's labor unions.
Yeah, labor unions versus business associations.
So let's just say labor unions would be allowed and their members would be allowed to make campaign contributions, but the businesses that had city contracts up $50,000 or more would not be able to make.
Exactly, or their associations if they had any members. And so I just think, you know, as you choose one versus the other, we should have either eliminated both of them or neither. A lot of, and like I talked about in the veto, and I spoke to the council president about this, much of the other parts of the transparency I fully support, and we will have state law on this, it looks like. Andy Billig is a champion of legislation in this area. I also worry this causes us to hire another person. And when the state law, it would do the enforcement, the Public Disclosure Commission already does this. I sit there and I don't know whether that's the top priority when the state is already doing this. And to have different rules for Spokane versus, say, Spokane Valley or others does cause confusion. And I also worry, I even saw it in my own campaign, my first campaign, many of my PDC reports we filed by hand. We wrote them out. Well, now you're going to have to file them with the state and worry about filing them with the city and just the complexity of them. If you read that bill, it goes on for pages and pages. And so who's going to enforce that? And then more importantly, you know, if someone wants to be a city council member and do it on the side, you're probably going to have to consult a lawyer, an accountant, to make sure that you're filling everything out correctly. So it will be the law of the land.
So you had talked about perhaps an outside firm reviewing that, or at least parts of that. Is that going to go ahead?
Well, because our city council or our city attorney had advised and given opinions to the council. We did, just for conflict of interest issues, had a review done by an outside attorney and many of the things I just discussed, which I think generally speaking, everybody agrees. And that's in some respects why the council president commented on that's why they did include the labor unions, because they felt like that maybe the labor unions would have an issue with it. And so there is, some obvious issues with the law in that area. And that's why I just didn't feel comfortable having it be the law of the city. And then fundamentally, many of the issues people are worried about are being taken or seemingly look like they'll be taken care of at the state level. And hiring another city employee to do something like this, I don't see it as a top priority. I would have rather hired another police officer, quite frankly.
Yeah.
So it's an issue of priorities.
Mayor Condon, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
And I think we're going to have him again in May, so we look forward to talking with him again. Thank you for your support of Inland Journal and Spokane Public Radio. If you didn't hear the whole program or you want to listen again, the podcast will be available later today at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Doug Nadvornik.